Hello, everybody. I'm sitting in the studio by myself today because, like we did in season one, we asked you across social media platforms to send in your dilemmas or questions or need for advice on something. And it was popular last time, so we are doing it again today. So I don't know what's going to come up. I haven't heard them before, and I'm just going to answer with my gut. Let's get started.
Hi, Trini. It's Francesca here. Just want to say how much I love listening to your podcast. Need a bit of advice today. Me and my husband have been together for 20 years and we've brought up four beautiful children who have all inevitably flown the nest and gone off to do other things. And I realised the change has really had an impact on mine and my husband's relationship. So just wanted to see if you've got any tips, resources or ideas of how we can navigate this new chapter of our life. Thank you.
It's a big one, isn't it? I have not been in this situation myself. I've had a lot of friends who have. And here in your voice, when you said the inevitable departure of the children, and I felt you use that word because you want to say it's a natural course of action and it's what happens, and yet I'm feeling X. So I would imagine that on one hand, you really miss your kids. And just acknowledging how much you miss them, as much as they're coming to visit you and they might not be totally out of your life at all, there's that sense of bereavement. And when we go through bereavement, we can do it singularly or united. And I don't know if you or your husband or equally spent time with your kids. One of you might be feeling it more than the other. I don't know how much you're sharing it, but I think things like this, when they're shared, honestly and candidly, it really helps just fill that hole and realize that you have this thing in common, perhaps at the moment, more than anything that you can see. And then I think it's understanding that we all evolve as people, and because of the circumstances of being married and having children and the different careers you have or had not had with your partner as well, you've changed as people from the people you were when you first met. It doesn't mean you're not right for each other, but it means maybe you need to get to know each other again for the people you are today. And that, in a way, for me, when I'm starting a new relationship, as it were, with an old friend, is to focus first on what do I really admire and like about them and hold on to those things, because those things are going to push you through the things that maybe over the years have built up to think, really, we don't do this together anymore, or we sit in different rooms watching telly, different TV shows in the evening, or whatever it is that you might be focusing on to think, how much life do we have together? And then I would think of finding some mutual things and challenging each other. I think we can become lazy in relationships. And I have done this myself in one or two relationships where I just become lazy and I sort of can't be bothered to make the effort. Then it's about what can you do to promote new experiences for you both to have together that you both haven't done before. And I think that's the crucial thing too, is to go and do something you both haven't done before, whether it's jumping out of an aeroplane and pushing yourselves to do something where it might be, oh, can we be asked? Challenge each other to be bothered. And it might be that you think you're pulling him and he's just sitting there being a bit lazy and you have to be the one with the drive. But unless you try this, you won't know. So I hope that that's a little bit of some helpful feedback. And the next question is from Susan.
Trini, my greatest fear is that I will never be good enough. I'll never be a good enough mum or wife or friend or daughter or teacher. And I'd love to know how to overcome that. To overcome that fear of just never being good enough. Thank you.
Oh, and you're not on your own here. And I think we can all cast doubts on our ability to be good at things. To hear you put everything together that consists of the whole of your life, I find very sad. And I think you've got to begin with some baby steps of realizing what you're good at. So that would be stopping listening to that little voice inside your head that's not really you, that's maybe telling you you're not good at that, you're not good at that, you're not good at that. I think you need to find some people who believe in you and be listening a little bit more to them than to the voice inside your head. Or maybe you have a couple of people in your life who are not that positive. But there are going to be people out there who do think you're a good teacher, do think you're a good mum, do think you're, you know, a good partner, a good friend, etc. So look at the people you're surrounding yourself with. Look at those people who you know love you unconditionally. And there are going to be people out there. And have the courage, perhaps, to say, I'm giving myself some negative stuff here. Can you just objectively let me know what I'm good at? And the thing is, if you ask that question, you've got to take on board what somebody says, that they're not people-pleasing. They know maybe what it's taken for you to say, I need you to tell me, to open up and to be that vulnerable and say, I need you to just tell me some stuff. And then you've got to write it down. And you've got to write it down, and it could start off with, Jane told me I'm really good at making somebody feel better if they're sad. Mary told me I'm good at telling jokes. Then you've got to change it from their name to, I know I am. And that transition sometimes is repetition. It's, you know, when you see those movies and somebody to get up the sort of courage looks in the mirror and sort of says, I'm great and I can do this, and, you know, gives themselves that affirmation. And you can look at that stuff and think, oh, that's so trite and cringy and whatever it is. But there's something about doing it and saying it. And the more you say it, the more you might hear those words and you might begin to believe some of them. And sometimes that expression, fake it to make it, is what that's based in. You're going to say this and not believe it. And then slowly you will, if you think about it enough, if you write it down enough. So that's one thing I want you to think about. Another thing is that when we take away what we're good at, we also, I think, remove our sense of gratitude for the life we have. There's something in the balance of these two things. So sometimes when I'm feeling I haven't got much to give in the world, I need to look at what I'm grateful for. And I have by my bed, which I don't write in every night, but I have a gratitude journal. And it's just today I'm grateful for. And it might start off with the very small things, that somebody smiled at me in a car and let me pass them, that I'm grateful I can afford the food, to put good food inside my body. But you've got to build up this tank of gratitude, because then that sense of the misery you feel around I'm not good enough will be a little balanced out. So these are just a few things that I use when I'm feeling an element of what you're describing, and I hope they can help. Next up, we have got Alexa.
Hi, Trini. My name is Alexa. I am saying hi today from New York City. I'm reaching out today to seek your advice around a situation that is creating some fear and anxiety for me. I've been working in the fashion industry on the business end, specifically in wholesale sales, for the past 10 years, but lately I've realized I don't feel quite creatively fulfilled. And I recently discovered your page, and you've sort of ignited a fire inside of me creatively with all of your styling videos. I've been styling friends and family for most of my life and have been really diving into it a bit more in the past 5 years to fulfill my creative aspirations. I am turning 30 at the end of the month, and I want to go into my 30s fighting for a career and doing something that I love every day, and styling is that thing. It's been something that I've loved and been great at for so long, and I would love for an inspirational word from you on how to get started and just mentally how to organize my thoughts and to stop having fear and anxiety around leaving the career I'm currently in and starting something new. Thank you.
Great question, Alexa. I'm going to come at it from so many different angles. Okay, the first thing that you've got to do is the practical stuff. I don't know what salary you earn and what your outgoings and your income is in, but one of the reasons, one of the main reasons people don't do a career switch is that the financial insecurity that comes with that career switch is greater than the passion to pursue the other career. And it freezes us from making changes. So we need to do things that protect our fear. So what I would say is you need to kind of look at the salary you're on. And is there any way within the salary that for the next 6 months, you can save some money per month? Because when you're doing a switch, and if you're going to go from fully employed to self-employed, you're going to have a void of income. And you need to offset that fear. So if you can start to save a little bit, that you can then have a runway that when you actually make the final change, and I'm not going to suggest that you go from one thing to the other overnight, that you have a sort of a 6 month runway in which you can build up what you're doing without having to be earning a lot of money to pay your outgoings because you've saved up to do that. And that will just give you that confidence. You'll be sitting on bricks and not quicksand. So that's one practical thing to think about. Now, there is that interstitial. There's that when you've got your daytime job and you can have your passion, which is going to become your career, starting up so you can begin to make some inroads into it. Now, there's lots of ways, and I wasn't sure if you felt you want to get into styling, as in high-end magazine styling, which I find very challenging and is a very, very small marketplace, or styling real women, which is frankly where I get my buzz. There is nothing I enjoy more, apart from making fantastic skincare and makeup products, than helping a woman transition from how she saw herself to the opportunity of a different way for her to perceive herself and the endless opportunities that opens up for her. So you need to start talking about that. I'm sure you already have social media presence, but how can you get some friends that you maybe just take on an expedition and you sort of say, this is Mary, and she feels X about how she dresses. She's stuck in a rut, or she always wears black, or whatever. Just put up front the issue. So, you know, get that hook in and do little films and put them up on social. And, you know, if you get across the point really quickly of what you're going to set up to do on that film, that's going to help to build a little audience. Now, your audience could also be, to an extent, the customers of the future for you. But the more you're out there showing what you believe in and how you tackle it, the more interested those people who also believe in your ideas or are inspired by how you talk about things will gravitate towards you and tell their friends. But it is about finding your voice. And for the people that you might have taken styling, Alexa, you could say to them, you know, what do you like about the experience you had with me? And try to just pick up on those things that they said, you know, I found intimidating, you made it easy for me, or I didn't know where to start to get from A to B, and you showed me X, you know, and think those are the hooks that you can also use when you're talking about styling people. And it's about getting clients and working out what you want to charge and looking at what the market charges per hour, per day. Would you ever do commercial work as well, adverts where, you know, somebody's looking for a stylist to dress real people? That's a hard industry to get into, and people who are in that industry can come from magazines and come from styling magazines. But where you're looking at styling for everyday shoots for ads and not high fashion, there is a market for that as well. But it does take a few years getting in the industry. So I think straight to styling real people, which I feel is where you're set, what you're saying. So I hope that helps you. You know, if you look at the five things that you think are stopping you, so probably finances, don't know anyone in the industry, how would I get my customers? You've got to break them each down and underneath each title, put a few little tits of information you're beginning to get that are going to help you to not make that seem an insurmountable reason why you shouldn't do it. I think you are under 30. You're a baby darling, you've got so many fantastic years ahead of you. I did not even know what I wanted to do until I was 35. So you're way ahead of me. So I wish you luck and I hope this has helped. Next up, we have Karen.
Hi, Trini. It's Karen from Australia. So my question to you is, I want to start a social media kind of program or page as a psychologist. And quite simply, my fear is about attracting trolls and just getting lots of negative attention and stuff like that. And I just really don't know how to handle that stuff. It just feels quite scary to do it. And I feel this is a barrier that's kind of in the way and stopping me from potentially following this vision that I have. So any advice on how you handle it would be really very much appreciated. Thanks, Trini. Love your work.
It's interesting that's your first thought as to why you wouldn't start to build up your social media page. When I started mine, it wasn't mine, but then there weren't many trolls out there because social media was in an earlier stage. I feel there's more trolls where people are removed from reality, really removed from reality. And you're dealing with psychology, which is a very intimate area about how we're thinking and how our thoughts affect us. And you must already have a number of people who follow you, even if it's 200, who follow you because they're your friend, or maybe one or two people because you are a psychologist. So I think it's just starting with knowing that you already have a community, and it's about nurturing that community, and like attracts like. So if you've already got a staunch set of supporters, however small that basket size is, the more that you speak your truth, sounds very trite, but, you know, just you're not being controversial, you're just keeping it real, you will attract the right kind of people. And if by chance you get somebody who is a troll, it might be you already have enough of an audience that they might just say, pop along to another Instagram page to troll, darling, which is what my community does. My community is fantastic, and they sort of look after me when somebody might attack me if they feel it's unjustified. And generally, if it's not damaging somebody's mental health, we might keep something up, and then people in the community would just say, go and do this on another page. What are you doing here? I have experienced people who, you know, have trolled me online. I think that whenever there's very strong political situations going on around the world, there will obviously be people who will go on to accounts that have a number of followers and sort of say, why don't you talk publicly about this, or why don't you support it? And those I ignore, because it's my choice as to what I do and don't talk about. Because I have a public platform shouldn't mean that I should comment on everything. I'm many times not educated to comment on lots of things, but also on others I might choose not to, because it's my personal opinion, it's not one I want to make public. I have the right, even as a public profile, to choose what I publicly want to talk about and what I don't want to. It doesn't make me open to everything. So I do manage in my head emotionally to protect myself against people who might have a strong opinion and leave it on my social media. If it comes ever to it not being about me but members of my family, I'd think very differently, and I would shut them down, block them, get them off. You know, if once or twice I had two or three people leaving comments around my daughter and I blocked them. I just thought, that's not appropriate, and this is my social media, it's not my daughter's. So I take swift action, and there are times when one needs to take swift action, but other times you just need to let it fizzle out. And sometimes by responding, you can spark somebody just going at it and at it and at it, because all they're seeking is attention, and they got attention. And so they now want to shout loudly. As a psychologist, I'm sure you appreciate that people who think it's fun to leave comments like that are obviously really disturbed themselves and not happy in themselves and kill with kindness. So you might be the psychologist who ignores them if they happen to come on your page, or you might be the one who says, you know, obviously this has triggered something in you, I hope you can get some help. I don't know how one deals with these things, but I just generally tend to ignore them. It shouldn't be your greatest fear as to why you start it, though. I think you're reading too much into stuff. As a psychologist you are, it's your job to do that. But try and feel freer, try and feel more creative, that creative side of you, when you're thinking, I want to grow my audience, and look at it from that side of your brain more than the over-analysis of the other side of your brain that I think is hard at work here. So look at the upside and not the downside, I think is what I'm also saying, because there's great opportunity. And when I scroll on Instagram and I see people talking about mental health and they've got an intelligent voice, I stop and I listen, because the more people out there who we can help with addressing mental health issues and giving people encouragement to feel better about themselves, the better. And I think it's a fantastic quest that you're on. Good luck. We're now going to listen to Natalie.
Hi, it's Natalie about the Fearless podcast and questions. My fear is recently separated and single mum, but have also launched my own business with two amazing business partners, and the fear that I won't do a good job of both areas of my life is just awful. So would love some advice, tips or tricks on those things. Thanks, Trini.
Oh, it's so tough, isn't it, that we start with the negative and not the positive. So I just first of all want to say, bravo, you're a single mum. I don't know what led to it, but it takes bravery to be in that situation, because sometimes one's leaving somebody or somebody has left one and then probably it was right they went. But you're doing it. And so I want to look at the positive aspect of you being a single mum, not the negative aspect. Secondly, you started a business and you're going for it and you have two partners, which is fantastic, because the wonderful thing about starting a business with partners is that you can lean on each other, and when one of you is a bit flat, the other one's firing. And I found this with Susanna and I in our partnership, that we luckily at the same time didn't always feel the same thing. So you've got that in your life as a support. And also you can be a support to them when they're a bit flat too. So that's brilliant. It's such a nice way. Starting a business totally by yourself can be a very isolating experience. So the energy to do both, you know, if you are a single mum, looking after your children is that number one priority, but also looking after yourself and doing things that fulfill you. Now, there's traditional things, which is, should we be dating and going out again, and which app should we follow, et cetera, et cetera. But it could be right now that your energy is there to go into the new business and to really make a success of that. And maybe that happens and slowly the other things happen. But that's in front of you and it's tangible and it's happening. So lean into it, enjoy it. And also, whenever you're starting a business, you have interaction with strangers, all right? And I'm just going to say, strangers bring a wealth of new experiences to our life, which could lead to anything. You know, when I go on a work trip, I might sit next to somebody on a plane who could be my husband in 5 years' time. You never know the situations in which you might meet people. And if you're thinking, I'm ready to meet people, it might be it's an app, it might be it's in the street, it might be it's sitting next to somebody in a situation. You don't know how it's happening. And I think also, weirdly, going looking for it doesn't make it happen quicker. So leaning into the excitement of this new business, to me, is what's on your horizon. And then just allow everything else to follow and enjoy it. It's challenging a new bit, starting a new business. And you're permanently putting out fires. But there's also, you're there with an idea that you think will work, that is a service or a product to people. And it takes courage to do that. And you've already shown so much courage. So I hope that's helped you to feel inspired and excited, and not feel you have to do everything all at once, too. And now we're going to listen to Lynn.
Hi, Trini. My name's Lynn. I'm 55. I'm scared of living. And I don't mean that I don't want to live. I'm currently in inner child therapy for abuse I suffered as a child. And it's taken me a long time to get to the place where I've been able to really deal with what happened to me. I was actually abused for over a decade by my mum's second husband. Been in and out of therapy over the years, but this one has been the only one that is really working, because it's really dealing with what happened to me and how it's still affecting my life. I'm married, I've got four wonderful children, I'm about to be a grandmother. And I'm scared because I don't know who I am.
I first of all want to say, Lynn, it takes such courage to look into our past and bring it into our present to then allow us to break the patterns of things we might do as a result and consequence of abuse in the past. I am not a therapist, so I can only share with you my own experience. But when I've had to do some deep therapy in my life, I do remember that there are times that I did it where I so just lived in the past that it incapacitated my present. And all those feelings rushed forward to penetrate my life and disturb it immeasurably so that I didn't feel that happy in it. Which I think is a little bit of where you are right now. Other times when I have had to look into things, I think it's because how I was behaving in my present day was a result of something that had happened in my past. So I had to go and look at that to then help change the way I, when I was presented with certain things in my present, it would trigger me because it was bringing up a feeling of the past, which is, I think, where you probably got to, that you've done this deep therapy. But it's still so important to wake up every morning and think, there's a woman, Lynn is today, the mother of 4 or 5 children, grandmother, matriarch, and survivor. And there is the little child that you are looking after now. So you've got an extra child in your life, haven't you, that you are looking after. And you're very maternal, so you're really sensing the responsibility of looking after this little child. And I think it's to remember it's a part of you, but it's not all of you. And we are incredible survivors in life. You know, we manage to do things despite, and we come across many people in our life. Listening to your story is one of them where you think, my God, that happened, and yet they managed to have a fulfilling life. But I do feel that there is this sort of maybe little empty thing. When you said at the beginning of, I don't know about living, but I did feel perhaps there's a hole that needs to be filled. And I can't give the answer as to what to fill it with. And when you are going through the process of intense therapy to look at things, it can leave this ache inside us. And that's perhaps when we have to allow to come in all the love of your grandchild to you, to the person you are today, all those people who love you for the person you are today. And to remember that's an important part of you, not to be negated by the circumstances of your youth. But I really feel for what you've gone through and that you've had the courage to talk about it. I'm sure there's many other people listening who perhaps are in therapy for something that happened a long time ago and they're having to live a fulfilled life and at the same time re-experience things from their past they found tremendously difficult. I don't know if that's helped at all, but I hope in some way it has.
Hi Trini, my name's Christian. I recently just turned 30 years old and I want to change around my wardrobe. I currently wear a lot of black and grey and blues and I wanted to add some colour. I just wondered if you had any advice on how best to do this, add some colour to my wardrobe but still keep it masculine. Thank you.
Hi Christian, let's define the word masculine, because in the world we live in today, masculine, feminine are literally, are they nouns or pronouns or adjectives that are not so clear. So, you know, can a man who is cisgender wear pink and can a girl wear blue? Yes. You know, I think we've grown up with such senses of what is deemed unmasculine as a colour. And yet I see some virile, fabulous men wearing bright colours and I think, wow, that's fantastic. I'm going to just give you this analogy, but I can look at Pharrell Williams and the whole kind of movement he's done at Louis Vuitton, which is about colour. And there's some cool men of colour, really virile, in these bright colours. And I don't think for a second that's not masculine at all. So colour is about what it brings into your life. And if you can change the conversation about is it too feminine or masculine to, What energy does it give off? I've done recently, I did a Closet Confessions on chakras and colours and the importance of colour and when you wear colour psychologically, what does it make you feel like? Yellow is for joy and spreading confidence, etc., etc. Blue is for, you know, thinking internally or calmness. Or so look at them that way. And I would go and either go on to Trinity London. I suggest go on to Trinity London, do Match to Me on makeup, and it will actually give you the colours you suit. So you put in your skin, hair and eye, and then it will give you this palette of colours that are the ones you suit. Now, it might be that you think, oh, I don't want to wear those baby pinks that I suit. I want to wear the other colours. But you could even start with the colours you already wear, like the white, the grey, the navy, those safe colours you wear, and look at the complementary colour that you can wear with them. And just start with a little bit of that accent. So if you wear charcoal grey, bring in a bit of red. It's beautiful together, but which tone of red, I don't know, because you, it depends if you're cool, mid or warm in your skin colouring and hair and eye colouring. So that could be a way to introduce. But that bigger conversation, of course, is just what colour means to us and trying to move the dial on your interpretation of that. But definitely, people who wear colour, I think, have more presence. I don't think black gives us presence. Does it give us gravitas? Does it make our figure look better? These things are all subjective. But I think when I see somebody come towards me and they're in colours, I go, wow, hi, you're present. And I'm sure, Kristen, you want to feel present. So that's changing the mindset on how you look at colour is step number one. Thanks for your question. And now we're going to hear from Toma.
Hey there, Trini. My name is Toma, and I'm an American who lives in Venice, Italy. And my friend Sibel sent me your Instagram post, and she said, Toma, this is you. You're fearless. The irony of this is I am afraid of everything. The difference is I do it anyway. And I think that's what it means to be brave, is to be afraid and do it anyway. Back in 2020, I made a decision to confront maybe my biggest fear. And I made a decision to no longer lie to myself, to tell myself the truth, no matter how hard it is, to pursue myself, to pursue the most authentic version of myself. And what am I afraid of? I'm afraid of being me, and I'm afraid of not being me.
All right, so let me try and get this. You feel the fear, but you do it anyway. But ultimately, you're afraid of being you and not being you. So who are you, Toma? I think that's what you've got to write down first. Who are you? But without how you appear to other people, who are you to yourself? Are you humorous? Are you sensitive? Are you kind? Are you open-minded? Are you adventurous? Are you fearless? You know, ask yourself, what are you? Just what you intuitively feel about yourself. So if I'm doing this list, I would say I'm oversensitive sometimes. I'm fearful. And when I'm fearful, I behave in a certain way. I can be fearless too. We can be both of these things, but it's really looking at understanding yourself first. And I'm going to go back to, you know, I've talked about before, like gratitude journal and things like that. Sometimes writing things down, and I don't know how much you write down, is really helpful because it allows us to see how we see ourselves. So if you are sort of writing every day your thought for the day or how you're feeling about life, and just, it's like you're going to start a conversation with yourself to really confirm that who you think you are. Let's get that dialogue going first. Then you've got an external dialogue of how you want to appear to other people and you want to be your authentic self. By this stage, maybe you give yourself a month of doing this. We're not in a rush. You've moved to Venice. It's all gorgeous. I'm so jealous you're in Venice. I got my daughter christened there and I had my 40th birthday there and I love it more than any other city nearly in the world. So after a month of doing this, you're going to practice what you preach and you're going to remember these things you are. So maybe before you go out in the morning and you're having lunch with somebody, you're going to say, remember, I'm funny, I'm dadalum, I'm these, that and the other. And, you know, you have your lunch with somebody, you leave and you think, did I feel I was me? Did the inside match the outside? And it's a journey. I had many years where I felt I didn't fit inside my skin, and that was just a lack of faith in who I was, because I didn't really know who I was, and I had to kind of rebuild that up. That was really after years of addiction and going to rehab and coming out, and, you know, I'd stripped back so many layers of the onion. I had to rebuild that onion again, and it takes time. But then you begin to understand and know yourself, and I know now that I am, whether I'm on Instagram or in a conversation, I am the same person, and it's very comfortable for me to know I am the same person. It's not always a good person, you know, I can be a cunt, but it doesn't change. It's predictable. And so so I do know myself, and that gives me confidence to know myself and probably makes me a little more fearless, because I know I'd just do it anyway like you. But I totally appreciate what you said at the beginning, is I do feel the fear and do it anyway, but it doesn't mean you're having the greatest journey doing that. So it's how can we also enjoy the journey? I've dosed around a bit. I hope I've given you some practical tips and some things to think about. And finally today, I received this message and I just want to share it as an inspirational story from Harriet.
It's Harriet based in Australia. I actually happened to come across your Instagram just by looking at Style by Sally, the stylist in Melbourne. And I was watching your stories and then got into a funnel looking at your podcast. And I absolutely love it. And I love the podcast, just the blurb, talking about just people's fears and challenges and how they've overcome them to thrive. And I really could just relate to that. Just myself being born with a facial difference, with a cleft lip and cleft palate, so with a scar on my face and looking different and thinking that no one would take me seriously, and I was quite bullied when I was younger and growing up, overcoming that fear and that challenge of adversity of a facial difference and thriving and surviving in life. As a 40-year-old woman, I just look back on life now being an orphan. I was given up for adoption when I was born, having been born with a congenital malformation facial issue. And in Asian culture, it's frowned upon, it's bad luck and all that stuff. It's auspicious to keep a baby like that just because of bad luck. So I was put in an orphanage, then I was adopted out to Australia in the 1980s. And yeah, now I'm being on social media, I'm running a virtual assistant business, helping other businesses, and being in front of the camera all the time. It's just crazy to think little of me when I came to Australia and with no confidence in that, empowering other women to step outside their comfort zone or just their just challenges and know that they can thrive to survive just like me. Yeah, I would love to just share my story with you and also to all your listeners, just to give a glimmer of hope, just from my experience and where I've been, what I've journeyed through, where I've come to be the person today, and just give that hope to someone else that may be listening to your podcast in the near future.
And what a wonderful message that Harriet has. And for those of you who would like to follow Harriet, her Instagram handle is by Harriet Kelly. What a story. I just want to actually end on the fact that in a few weeks, in fact, probably 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to turn 60. And listening today and all the time when I talk to people, when they reference themselves by age and where they feel they've got to in that timeline, it makes me aware of how limiting judging ourselves by our age can be and how liberating it can be to achieve more as we go down the path of life, and that age should never hinder us. And yesterday, this report came out from Forbes and it was celebrating women in Europe and Asia and Africa. It's called 50 over 50. There was always this report called 30 under 30, which was these, you know, generally sort of tech kids doing really well, but they had a 50 over 50, which I thought was such a great thing, and I was in it. And it made me very excited, mainly because I'd like other women to feel it's never too late to start anything to change something about yourself or to go on a new journey. So that would be my message as I get to one more benchmark, as it were. Age is a number, but it shouldn't define you. It should only perhaps be a benchmark when you think, I'm this age and I'm doing this and it's exciting because it's not necessarily what I thought I'd be doing at this age. And I think I can say that when I was 20, did I think about the concept of retirement? Didn't enter my head. But was that the age in which people generally were retiring from life when I was in my 20s? Yes, it was. And I'm just beginning my journey. That's what's the most exciting thing. So that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening to Fearless. And we'll catch up again soon.